around how does this look on the ground? So on top of explaining the strategy and some of the things behind it, if you may be able to give us some sort of examples of how this could look on the ground, especially from a municipal perspective, and obviously we'd be working with our First Nation partners in our respective communities as well. So Val, I'll turn over to you, Val. That's the context from the AYC perspective. And
awesome. Okay. So, and I believe, I think everyone's been in some type of presentation about this in the last year. So what I'll do is I will share my screen. And I'm going to run this slideshow. There we go. So you should be able to see that. Yes. Okay. Awesome. And so some of this, I might zip through a little bit because I'm pretty sure that you guys are up to speed on it. And then others where I think that it'll be worth spending a bit more time, maybe have some more discussion. I'll spend a bit more time there. So as you know, UConn chose to do things differently. We have had this UConn Advisory Committee on MIWG 2S Plus since 2015, and it's really evolved over time. So we started with the UConn Regional Roundtable that called for the MIWG inquiry, the national inquiry. Once the inquiry was called, the committee switched to participating and coordinating UConn's participation. And we were the only jurisdiction in Canada that participated at the national inquiry as a united voice, whether that was First Nation governments, Indigenous women's organizations, or government of UConn. We all went together and represented UConn as a whole. Once the inquiry was finished in June 3rd, 2019, we got the final report. The committee switched then to developing the strategy. And now the committee has switched again to oversee the implementation of the strategy. So it's been an evolutionary piece. We did take a whole of UConn approach, as you know, so that we would have all folks. So we have, this is the kind of the composition of the advisory committee, but we did reach out to various municipalities across the territory to consult and to participate. But we tried to definitely not this have this as a government of UConn strategy, because we knew that that was a colonized way of looking at it, and it hasn't worked in the past, and it's not going to work now. So we needed to do things differently. And this wasn't, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy for government of UConn, quite frankly, to give up control to families, to Indigenous women's organizations, but it was necessary in order for it to move forward in a good way. You can see the foundational values. I'm not going to go into too much of this because these are all reflected in the strategy, but we wanted to make sure it was values-based. And that was really important, because when there comes a point where we're trying to figure out how do we move forward, we go back to these values and make sure that we're adhering to them. We also, though, didn't just look at the National Inquiry's calls for justice. We did go back to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's calls to action. We looked at the testimony of UConn families through the MIWG process, not all of which was reflected in the national report. Of course, I mean, that was meant to be a cross-section of Canada, but we felt it was important to go back and go over the UConn testimony in particular. We had submissions from the various parties with standing, so Liard Aboriginal Women's Society and Watson Lake, Kwalundun First Nation, as well as Government of UConn's. We had a family report from survivors and families of MMIWG 2S Plus, and obviously the National Inquiry. So this was not just kind of one point in time. We really tried to look at everything that was available to us. And what struck us as a committee was these four pathways to violence that the National Inquiry indicated. And we really felt that the only way we were going to get out of violence was to look at the past and develop paths that would move away from these traditional pathways to violence. So one was obviously the traumatic nature, the multi-generational, intergenerational nature of trauma, and how that trauma response is shaping just a lot of the work, and it needs to. It's really important that we always go back and consider the trauma that's happened. The other pathway to violence was this whole piece of governments in particular, and territorial and provincial governments, not so much. It was, I mean, some municipalities across Canada were highlighted, particularly the larger ones, but not necessarily smaller municipalities, but that government, bigger governments tend to maintain the status quo and kind of use inertia just to continue forward. And that major change is certainly not necessarily the strength of large governments. And that this inertia of status quo has really led to violence along the way. The third path, the social and economic marginalization of Indigenous people, particularly Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirited plus people, but Indigenous people in general, through various government of Canada in particular, laws, programs. And then finally, the final path was really ignoring the calls of Indigenous women and girls for decades around these problems, ignoring their agency, ignoring their expertise, and allowing this to go on for far too long. So those were the four pathways to violence. And we wanted to really develop four paths that would move away from violence and lead to changing the story to dignity and justice. So the vision, and obviously this is, I think you see right there in the second line, the community focus is certainly, I think, something that municipalities, local area councils certainly can take to heart, that really it's about having healthy, safe, and violence-free communities. So it's yes, it's for Yukon as a whole, but it starts at the community level. And that really, you know, having that level of respect and value, equity, dignity, justice in a safe and violence-free community is at the heart of what we're trying to achieve. So, you know, it's a big vision, but it's certainly on a community-by-community basis doable in with the strategy that we have over the long term. I talked about principles. These are some of the, again, the foundational values, and we added these pieces. One of particular interest, and it may be as well to you at the municipal level, is around the issue of sustainability, and particularly around funding. So having government funding that comes and goes, like it's project-based, it lasts for 2 years, and then it's gone, tends to be a problem. So this stop-start with government funding programs is not helpful. John, I see you have your hand up. I'm sorry, I didn't see it before. I'm not sure where you, when you put it up. When I'm sharing my screen, I can't see everything all at once, but I see it now.
That's okay. It's actually quite relevant to what you're talking about. Are you able to hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I just wanted to touch base on the sustainability piece and the community level implementation piece. Right now, our model of government has more or less part-time members of council. And so the CAOs take a significant piece in moving forward initiatives on a local level. That's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And piece that together with the other gaps in the structure of the system of government, as well as the precarious funding piece, and we have a really good recipe for preserving the status quo. Mm-hmm. Which is an issue that you identify. So how do we actually address those as well as deliver on the implementation here?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. As we get to the accountability framework and the whole piece about sustainable funding, like there is a full action plan in the strategy about changing how we do funding for any group that's involved in the strategy, right? It's an issue at the municipal government level. It's an issue for Indigenous women's organizations. For First Nation governments in some cases. So it's definitely a piece that has to be changed. So the whole, again, project by project funding. So it does mean looking at the whole funding model for, in this case, like for municipalities, and what is the expectation of what's going to be delivered, and then what do you need to put in place to deliver it? So that's definitely a piece of the action plan. And honestly, the last couple of months when we started working around some of this stuff, but really once the election was called, I'll be honest, we haven't been able to meet as a committee just because we're in caretaker mode now as a government of Yukon. The committee is still trying to move forward with their work, but I don't have an update in the last month about what that action plan looks like, but it's absolutely critical. I mean, it was a foundational principle that the way we're doing funding right now does not work. and it actually causes more harm than good. Like this, here's project funding for 2 years, and then you don't get it again, or you don't have enough capacity to actually deliver on the things that you want to be able to deliver on, because you talk about, you know, the municipal government model in UConn, where all the elected officials are basically volunteers, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I'll jump in. We have one full-time elected official in the Yukon, that's the mayor of Whitehorse. Mm-hmm. The councillors in Whitehorse are part-time. And then when you get in the rules, we're all, everything we're doing is above and beyond what our livelihoods are, whatever that may be. So it's a concern. And yeah, we're short-staffed. And I think even the city of Whitehorse, if you talk to them, they would talk about their being short-staffing. Now they're significantly larger than the rest of us. And so as John articulated, I mean, when it comes to actually doing stuff, it comes to the CEO in terms of their time. And on top of that, where do you find the funds? And I can speak from the Village of Teslin perspective. We were trying to allocate $5,000 to $10,000 in our budget time in terms of discretionary funding. It wasn't a lot to work with.
Yeah.
So you've highlighted a couple of issues for us. And, you know, with our membership accepting the strategy, so the political will is there. It's just, how do you make it happen? And that's one of our concerns. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hear you. I mean, I think that's the kind of the crux of where we are right now, in trying to figure out those pieces and trying to loosen up some of the pockets at the federal government level as well, to enable us to do things differently. I actually am also the co-chair for the National Action Plan. So I'm co-chairing that with on behalf of all the provinces and territories. And this is an issue right across the country, but I think the really rural municipalities, the smaller ones, like, it's not Toronto. It's not like those are, they're bigger than government of Yukon, right? It's really when you get down to, what does this look like in rural and remote communities in Canada? And I talked about the vision, which is at the community level, right? Like, if we don't have healthy and safe communities that are violence free, then this whole thing doesn't work. And some of that does fall at the municipal level. So there has to be an ability to have that funding, that voice, that accountability. So I hear you. And it's a piece, as we go through the rest of the presentation, you'll see, is one of the action plans is, how do we make that happen? If it's in a different funding model, and you know, some of the issues you're raising are bigger than MIWG, right? Like, there's a definite issue with what's expected to be delivered at the community level, and the structure and funding that's available at the community level to deliver. And MIWG is now, this strategy is another piece on top of, I think, probably an already strained system.
I just want to point out, I think John was unmuting. I don't know if he had an additional question. John? Sorry.
Sorry, I just had to navigate this thing here. I'm encouraged by what you just said, Valerie. I think your points are, you know, very salient and strike to the heart of the issue. For me, again, the concern is, YG knows the gaps. And this is an issue, well, when I say this, I mean the implementation of this strategy, I don't think can wait another 10, 15 years. Oh. And so we have to make a conscious decision if we're putting the chicken before the egg, which is try to implement a strategy in a system that is designed for its, at best, mediocre success in implementation, or actually change the structure and align it so that it makes it way easier to be successful on the other end of this. That's just my comment. Thank you very much.
I am with you. And really, at the moment, we're trying to figure out what happens today in UConn and what that means tomorrow with respect to platform commitments and what Government of UConn is willing to do. And then, you know, working again with our biggest funder of Government of UConn, which is Government of Canada, to look at, you know, what does this mean? I am really hopeful. Like, that declaration signing in December was powerful. Like, we are the only jurisdiction in the country that has actually put this on paper and said, we're going to do something about it. So the pressure is definitely on UConn to actually walk the talk and put our money where our mouth is in this. So I am very hopeful. I didn't do all this to have it sit on a shelf. it can't continue the way it is. Like the human cost of how we're doing things for Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit Plus people, but really for all women, girls, and LGBTQIA folks, it's not working. And yeah, so I think I might be preaching to the choir here a little bit with you guys, but there we go. All right. So our goals are obviously to have that coordinated response across UConn to end violence, which is a pretty lofty goal. We do believe increasing the economic independence of folks is a really critical piece. And that means being able to be economically independent wherever you live in UConn. And I actually truly believe that COVID has opened up a whole host of other opportunities, particularly for people living in UConn communities. I've always a big believer in the fact that that technology has broken down geographical borders, but COVID has certainly shown it in a bigger way. So looking at how can you be independent and not have to move to Whitehorse away from your family and support? How do you, particularly for women who look at moving to Vancouver as a solution, which tends not to be a solution at all. So that's really important. And then really engaging the public and having folks understand, the things that we do as a society, that the media does to perpetuate stereotypes of Indigenous women in the media and how they report. All those kinds of things are really important, that we as a society need to look at this and become a bit more educated and aware of what we're doing that has contributed and what we can do to change. So those are the big, broad goals. We talked about those four pathways to violence. These are the paths to moving forward. So I'm gonna just do a one pager, and I believe I've shared this with you folks before, because this is basically the strategy on a one page. And it doesn't mean that any one of these areas is more important or that the numerical order of things that, you know, path one of strengthening connection is more important than anything else. It's just a way of showing it. And it doesn't mean that 2.1 is more important than 2.9. That's not the case. It's just a way of, when we discuss it, I can say, hey, and 2.5 is just easy to reference. So just with that proviso. So these are the four paths to really addressing violence. And the issues, John, that you talked about around sustainability and accountability are in path four, the community action and accountability. And, you know, when I look at these different paths, I see the municipal level of government in a very lead role in some of them and in a supporting role in most, quite frankly. I would say, and I've had this discussion with some folks as we did the consultation last year, that commemoration is important. And actually having visible signs of commemoration of those who have gone missing or have been murdered. Oftentimes there are no grave markers. But having something in communities that says, you know, there's a monument or whatever that might be, it might be a healing totem, that there's an opportunity for commemoration. And the Indigenous women's organizations and the families are accessing federal funding as we speak. There is a fund for commemoration, but, you know, just like we have the cenotaphs for, our war heroes, maybe there's an opportunity for commemoration, whether that's land, space. I don't know what that would look like in an individual municipality, but certainly that's one that comes to mind as something that could be there. The other piece I would say, and I'm not sure how each of your municipal councils work. I've been in some municipal offices, but not all. But having, if you have meeting rooms that are available for use for families who want to get together to be able to access technology, maybe to, you know, be part of something that might be something small, but would have a big impact. So that, I mean, that's what I really see in path one. Where personally I see the biggest opportunity for municipalities is in path two around community safety in particular. So, and I was happy to see the different political parties talking about really putting money into community safety assessment plans and the implementation. So this is literally at the community level, working with the community to do a safety assessment that includes safety by environmental design. So looking at lighting, trails, just all the parts of a community that may not physically actually be safe. But the safety assessment looks at more than that. Like it really gets back to the root causes of what's the issues. So a couple of communities have done these in a comprehensive way. You've probably heard of Quanlin Dunn, which is an interesting one because it's within the city of Whitehorse. So that's an interesting model. But Selkirk First Nation did this for the town of Pelly. And again, interesting, there's not a municipality there, but their safety assessment went into things like, how do you communicate? Why aren't people, like Pelly was interesting. Quanlin Dunn had over 1,000 calls to RCMP in a year before they did their assessment. Pelly had almost none. Like there was stuff happening, but people weren't phoning the RCMP about it. Why not? So this really looks at all of the aspects of safety in a community in the assessment, then developing the plan and then moving forward with implementation. And the piece here is that, yeah, there's, you know, the safety assessments could take between 6 and 12 months to do, but it's something that could be done within maybe 2 or 3 years across every community in Yukon. And then it's looking at the plan and a solid long-term implementation plan with funding. So that's been the rub for Quanlin Dunn, for example, right? Like they have their community safety officers, but they're constantly begging for funding to keep it going. So they get 3 years, then they get 2 years. So for them as a self-governing nation, they're looking at their administration of justice agreement with the federal government to have the long-term funding. That wouldn't be the case in other, like Faro, for example, doesn't have that option. It doesn't have a First Nation with a self-government agreement and an administration of justice. So what would that look like? What would long-term funding look like in a community like Faro? So this is one that I think that could be implemented quickly. Where there is a municipal government or a local area council, they really need to be involved in these safety assessments. Because some of it is, Gord, you did a presentation for the Tourism Advisory Board. You talked about dogs, ditches, and dumps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All part of community safety.
Yeah.
Right? And I know your mandate goes beyond that, but that's, you know, what are the roles of municipalities in this? And how can you play a role in the implementation of it? And perhaps, you know, this is something that we've seen UConn is being held up as a model nationally and internationally around the safety assessments that have been done in Quanlin Dunn in McIntyre, but Selkirk First Nation as well as a community. So I really see a huge piece there. And the other part in this path may be transportation and communication. So the whole that whole piece around trying to find viable transportation between communities, but particularly between communities in Whitehorse, where people are coming in for centralized services in Whitehorse. And we've had lots of stories of women trading sexual favors for a ride, which puts them in significant danger. It's just the lack of transportation infrastructure in the territory is a huge issue. So I'm not sure what role municipalities could play in that, but I think there's definitely something there.
So Val, just a couple of points. So one, TTC's also just hired they're going to be hiring community safety officers. They've hired a manager and they're undertaking that assessment. Mm-hmm. So another one on the list. Second thing is in terms of inter-community travel, there is a working group and their work is coming mm-hmm. to an end now looking at that. And it's complex. I was in a call late last week and some interesting findings, but there's a whole lot more work to be done. Now they were looking more on efficiency and moving people and equity as well. So that was more their lens. So it's interesting they've got that underway, but it's also quite apparent that's a longer discussion. And the other thing, just want to note that we're going to go a little over. June, are you okay waiting in this? June Hampton, our next speaker is here. Are you okay waiting for another 5 minutes or so?
Yep, that's good.
Thanks. All right, thanks.
Awesome. Hi, June.
Go, yeah. Val.
Gore, is that the First Nation Chamber of Commerce initiative around the transportation, or is that a different one?
That's the First Nation Chamber of Commerce one. Yeah.
Yeah, because again, all of these, there's 31 what we're called action plan areas, and they will not all be led by Governor of Yukon, right? So within community safety 2.1, there'll probably be 14 or more individual plans, right? Because every community is different. What applies in Faro doesn't apply in Dawson, doesn't apply in Teslin. There might be some common elements, but the majority of it's going to be very community specific. But I'll follow up with the First Nation Chamber. We were aware of their work, but it'd be good because really we could start linking them in as the results of this as potentially a lead on 2.8.
Yeah, I think the report's on their website, yeah. And I don't have it handy, but.
I'll follow up on it. Yeah. Thank you. Yep. So, I mean, those are some of the big ones. And then we talked about community action and accountability and what that looks like. So economic independence education, sorry, I didn't mean to step over that. Again, I'm looking at this and perhaps in the larger communities, but safe housing is obviously a big issue. And, I'm not as familiar with the municipalities' work in that area versus the government of Yukon, but if there's, work there that can be done, that's certainly important. And then also looking at those major resource extraction and major infrastructure projects, that's one where we're looking at it from two lenses. One is the impact of women in mining and resource and big infrastructure. So how do we get more women being able to take advantage of those types of work? The bigger piece at the community level is the impact of those projects on women in the community. So, when you look at Mayo, for example, with Victoria Gold, and having that workforce come in and out of their community, switching over, what's the impact in that community of that project on women and girls? So those are the types of things that are happening under there. So I'm not sure what the relationships with municipalities might be, but there could be opportunities. And then in community action and accountability, a lot of these, the public information and so on, we're really looking at that at a territorial level or a First Nation level, but there's no reason it couldn't be at a municipal level around public information and training for folks in the history of MYWG. How do we get here? Because if we don't understand how we got here, we're not going to learn from those lessons and be able to move forward. Again, it was envisioned for sure at the territorial level, but there's no reason that there couldn't be something at a community level around this. And I think the biggest piece for municipalities is, as we talked earlier, is around that strategy accountability framework and how funding happens around sustainability. And that's the conversation, the next conversation that we probably need to have, is getting that sustainable funding. But I've made a note just to talk to my colleagues in community services around looking at this in a bigger way, right? Like this is bigger than MYWG, but we're layering on this other piece around how municipalities are funded in the territory. So there's a lot in there, but the strategy is online. I'm just gonna skip a couple of slides to get to the crux of what's next. So you know all the partners, everyone signed it off. We signed our declaration. We signed it in December 2020. Right now it's getting that implementation plan done. So there is a technical working group that is starting to look at identifying priorities, who might be the lead partners on different initiatives, and looking at the action plans and where they lie. Now, that does not at all limit anyone from looking at what they can do. Like obviously TTC is moving forward with their community safety, right? Absolutely. Like this does not prohibit anybody from moving forward. But what we're trying to do is then collect all that information so that we can show the whole picture of what's actually being done in the territory. But there will be action plans. Like we know Yukon Women in Mining want to do some lead work on really understanding women in the mining sector and how do we get more women taking advantage of these economic opportunities and still being able to, you know, raise their family. The whole 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out rotation doesn't really work well. How can that be changed? So Yukon Women in Mining, as an example, is taking the lead on that work. There will be other lead partners, like the Workers' Compensation Health and Safety Board is taking the lead on making sure that Yukon workplaces are culturally and psychologically and physically safe for all workers, but for Indigenous women in particular, and for two-spirited LGBTQIA folks as well. So there will be a whole bunch of different lead partners. We will plan to have that accountability framework where we bring all partners back together every year to look at what have we done. If you said you were going to do X and you were funded to do X, how did it go? What happened? And involving the families in that discussion is really important because they're at the heart of this work and they're keeping us honest. You know, they spent decades calling for an inquiry and, you know, they have the rightful expectation that we're actually going to do what we say we're going to do. So that accountability framework is critical. And in fact, again, this is the gold standard for Canada. Other jurisdictions, including the National Action Plan, are looking at Yukon's accountability framework as a place where, yeah, we can't just let this sit on the shelf for 10 years. Like, this is a now issue, and there are still women and girls in this country who are going missing or being murdered every single day. So this is not something we can wait on. But there will be opportunities, again, for involvement on action plans. But if there's any municipality, I know not everyone's on this call, but Laura or Gord, you know, as you reach out, send the message out that, you know, don't wait for a formal invitation. If there's a municipality or a local area council who believes that they could work on something, then, you know, the communication works both ways. And we do plan on having a separate website and communication to the Yukon Advisory Committee. I am really hoping that after this next year, that we move the secretariat function for this outside of government of Yukon so that it really is owned by stakeholders as opposed to the government. Because, you know, government owning these things, it's great in some ways, but it's a colonized system that doesn't necessarily always fit what needs to be done. So an example is, like I said, this last month of being in caretaker convention, government of Yukon, our hands were tied on what we could do in moving things forward, whereas our Indigenous partners had no such restrictions. So they could keep on moving, right? And whereas we couldn't. So I'm hoping to get this out of government of Yukon as the holder of all things and into some other construct, whether that's First Nations, Indigenous women's organizations, a new organization. I don't know what that looks like, but those are some of our next steps.
Great. Thanks, Val. I'm just going to have to wrap it up a little, but John does have his hand up. So John.
Okay. Here we go.
Quick question. Thank you for the presentation. If it is moved out of Yukon government's hands, would that decision be made unilaterally? Will the partners, including municipalities, have a say? Any thoughts? Yeah.
No, I expect, John, that we'll be bringing it back to the first accountability forum and bring back options to say, here's some different things. I mean, government of Yukon certainly will always have a role. And we will always have a funding role as well. But our plan is to bring it to the accountability forum. So that's to all partners. So that includes everybody who signed on to the declaration. So that's all municipalities as well. To see, you know, here's some different paths, here's what we recommend, and to get buy-in for it.
Okay, thanks, Val. Just a couple of comments before we let go. One, we've recorded a session, although we were small in numbers, that will go out to our members. And I'm sure they'll reach out. Just a couple more things in terms of some of the changing landscape at the municipal level. Obviously, we have some structural issues, as John talked about earlier on, and I did as well. But community well-being came up in our strategic planning session, among all the other things that we do as municipalities, water, wastewater, and all that. That did come out, and a lot of this stuff is connected to that. The other thing is we do have a resolution coming forward around intercultural anti-racism, which leads to that intercultural competence and certain discussions around some of the institutional racism and things like that. So we started, we're still in the sort of awareness, but they're certainly bubbling up through our membership. We, of course, have some restrictions around how we can make these things happen, as John talked about, but at least the awareness is growing within our membership. So I just want to point that out. I just want to ask before we go, Corey or Laura, do you have any comments or questions before we turn over to June? And just,
I don't. Thanks for the presentation. It was really informative and interesting. Look forward
to Corey.
Yes, I don't either, but thank you, Val.
And John, do you have any last words? I know you've talked a couple of times, but.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Val. I really appreciate it. Much appreciated hearing all your great work, and great that our membership is also seeing the value as well. And we'll see how we can help going forward. Definitely our membership have this on their radar.
Awesome. Thank you. And I will say goodbye, but Laura knows how to get in touch with me. And if you need anything else, certainly do that. And good luck in your presentation, June.
Thank you.
Bye.
June, sorry about that. We went a little over, but it doesn't seem to matter how much we try to manage this. And I was like, how are we going to fill an hour? And then, well, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
So I'll do a little small introduction. I don't know. First, do you know everybody? Maybe we'll do introductions. Corey.
I don't know Corey or John.
Corey, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Corey Belmore. I'm the CAO here at the City of Dawson.
John?
June knows me.
Okay. Oh, right. Farrell.
Oh, sorry. I didn't recognize the
name. Yeah, Farrell. So
I didn't see the last name.
Yeah. And in your Laura. Yeah. I assume. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Want me to share your presentation, June?
Yes, please.
Okay. So we've got June is from the Yukon Tourism Advisory Board, and I was invited to a meeting in February where I provided a little bit of input on AYC and what we're doing. And this is a reciprocal of that. And June is, we were asked to endorse her when she applied on the board. She's not there as an AYC rep, to be clear, but we endorsed her as since she's in Faro. So she understands the community concerns, and she's here to talk about what YTAB has been doing. Remember when there's a few things I noted when I was talking with YTAB myself. You know, we have a common love for our Yukon and communities and vibrant communities and northern way of life. We want to build strong, healthy communities and develop partnerships. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that they're part of their pillars. Some of the action items around infrastructure, such as roads, communities, signage, and housing to help with recruiting and retention of workforces, and outstanding visitor experience through beautification. So those are some things I picked up on where there's parallels to what we're trying to do. So June's here to talk about YTAB. So June, if you want to introduce yourself a little bit and okay, jump in.
Well, I'm the community's representative on the Tourism Advisory Board, and by communities, it actually, in the definition of who's to be on the board, it is a representative of the municipalities. It's a bit of an anomalous thing. It wasn't really clear beforehand what they were expecting under a community's representative. So I will make some comments later about my suggestions going forward. So maybe, Laura, if we can go to the next screen. So the Tourism Advisory Board was just created last March. The applications went in late 2019. I think they had to be in by the end of January. And as Gord mentioned, I did seek support from AYC, and then I was appointed as the community's representative. We were appointed the 15th of March, I think we got our notification, and our first meeting was on the 20th, because of course COVID happened, and all of a sudden there was all sorts of things that had to be dealt with urgently. So we never really got the orientation and some of the bureaucratic things that normally would be done. We had to dive right in and start making recommendations to the minister for her to take to the Yukon government, and also for her to take to the tourism minister federally. And we've come up, I think, with 39 recommendations already. If we go to the next screen, I think. Okay. So we are not an advocacy organization. We're strictly to provide advice and recommendations to the minister. And basically, it's supposed to be mainly dealing with anything relating to the tourism development strategy, which was prepared prior to our being appointed. One of the recommendations was that we be appointed. And we're there to monitor what's happening with the priorities, the action plans, are things getting done, and are we continuing to keep within the vision and goals of the strategy. Next screen. So here's where the one thing we can do is we can bring issues to the meetings that we think are important and hopefully make recommendations out of that to the minister. But most of it is that we're responding to what the minister is asking us to do, and also advising on budget allocations to the minister. Next screen. So these are the goals from the strategy. As Gord mentioned, things are quite community oriented. When I first saw the strategy, I was very pleased with how much there was for the communities. So then we could go to the next screen. So these were the core values. And as you can see, one of them is building healthy communities. And the one thing we have asked to be added as a result of everything with COVID is to prioritize visitor and Yukon resident safety. And we wanted to make it not just for visitors, but also for residents. One of the things I have found is that I have to keep reminding them that this is not just about the tourism industry. They tend to focus because that's the majority of the members, and a lot of times they'll write out a recommendation and then I'll have to come back and say, don't forget the community aspect of it. So AYC and the communities are sort of a bit of an anomaly on the board in that they're not part of what most people regard as the tourism industry. But all of us know that we all have visitors in our communities. So the communities are essentially part of the industry, but not normally considered when people talk about the tourism industry. Next screen.
I bet Dawson would support that.
Exactly. So pillars for success. These are all things that I think fit in with what the communities would like to see as well, even though you may, like Faro, not really have a lot of visitors, but visitors are still a part of our experience as a community. And we've sort of taken the position in Faro that anything that's good, great for Faro should be good for tourists as well, and work from that. Okay, so next screen. So here, Denny prepared this. So he's pointing out that we're not an advocacy, that the advocacy basically falls on the organizations that are specifically related to tourism plus AYC. All the members were appointed for their experience and expertise, and they basically appointed us in staggering appointments, and mine was for 2 years. So mine expires next March. And again, highlighting that we respond to requests from the minister that she wants us to consider. The next screen. So this is about original terms of reference said that we should meet quarterly. We met 20th of March, we met early April, we met late April, we met in May, we met in June, we met in July, and then I think we had a break till September. And September, November, December, January, February. So we've basically been focused on COVID, although we've switched more from the support, relief, and trying to work more now on the getting ready to move forward with reopening when that becomes possible. The board also was supposed to have an annual report out, which should have been out about now, but because of the election, as Val mentioned about the other thing, we are a part of government board, so we couldn't meet. We were scheduled to meet in March, but we couldn't. And then at that point, we were supposed to organize our annual report. So I'm not sure when the next meeting will be, probably not until May now. So we're a little behind already on things, but and we're also supposed to have a public open house, but whether that's going to be possible this year or not, we'll have to see. So next screen. So this is about how we, our recommendations, and although they're basically, as I say, geared to the tourism industry, we do keep bringing up the communities. And for instance, one of the recommendations I remember was fairly early on about the postponement of taxes until the fall. And at the same time, I requested that we also put in there that there needed to be financial support for the communities to offset that loss of the income from the taxes. So those are the kinds of things that I try and keep bringing in the community aspect of it. And again, getting into the integration and implementation with other stakeholders, AYC is certainly a stakeholder. So next screen. And as Gord already mentioned, he did a presentation with us on our meeting at February the 18th. And if and when we finally start having meetings, we would like to be able to have your community representative and possibly the chair of the Tourism Advisory Board attend your AGM if and when that happens. Next screen. So Denny's specifically highlighted the things in the tourism development strategy that specifically align with what AYC does, the need for vibrant communities and the northern way of life, building strong, healthy communities, development of partnerships, and the need for resident and visitor safety. So next screen. So the year ahead, as I mentioned, we're still in the relief mode, unfortunately, until the borders open, but we are trying to get industry readiness going so that when the borders do open, they will be able to react quickly and start moving into the recovery plan. But it's looking highly unlikely that there's going to be very much happening this summer other than internal travel. And that means that a lot of the tourism businesses will be going 2 years with no revenue or very, very little revenue. So recovery and support for recovery is really important. The government of Yukon has been really supportive of the programs that they've worked out, some in conjunction with CanNor, have been crucial. They brought on recommendations from us. They brought in two advisors to help the people in the industry move through all the programs that might be available to them and how you apply and just support them. So one was through TAIA and the other one was through the Wilderness Tourism Association. But they worked with people from anywhere in the industry, and even whether they were members of those organizations or not, they worked with them. And those positions were funded by the government as well. So the two things I wanted to bring up was in Faro, we have a community tourism committee, which reports to council. And I think that role would help take some of the load off your councils when it comes to, you know, working on ideas and implementation. And also, which ties into the second idea I have, they would be potential people to be the representative of the communities on the Tourism Advisory Board. As I say, my term is up next March. I, at this point, don't plan on applying to continue as the representative because I feel a little out of the loop in that I'm not directly involved in AYC. So if AYC wanted to come up with someone who would sit on the advisory board, or as I am, bring someone in who's on a community advisory board, I think that would, they would still have a little bit of an anomalous position, but it would be better than bringing someone in totally outside of the community structure. So we welcome any questions or comments.
Any comments from Corey, John, Laura?
No, thank you, June, for the great presentation.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks, June. That was really good. Lots of work and stuff going on. I know this last year hasn't been probably what anybody expected to try and work your way through, but it's good to keep going. Thanks for that.
Yeah, you're very welcome, and thank you for allowing me to do it.
Yeah, and I concur. It's I really appreciate all the hard work and putting communities, reminding people that communities are important too, for a whole bunch of reasons. I'm not sure how well organized we are municipal wise in terms of economic development and in particular tourism. I know in Teslin, we relied heavily on Teslin Clinic Council. They were developing with Teslin Development Corp, their nonprofit arm, a tourism plan, and I think they got into it through a few phases. I was on that board, the DDC board, and we never quite got to the end. So there's a bit of, in some communities, especially in like Teslin, there is no one championing tourism here. It happens. It's very passive. I don't know what it's like in other communities. I don't know, Corey, what's it like up in Dawson? Because you guys have a very active tourism.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the city, while we're not directly involved in it, because there's the other people here that do that work in Dawson, certainly supporting all of those organizations. It's not something we have taken on, though, specifically, for sure.
Yeah, I know in Haines Junction, when I initially was appointed, I reached out to all the communities, and the mayor from Haines Junction came back and said that the municipality really had nothing to do with tourism, that was all left to the First Nation. So there's a little disconnect somewhere there.
For sure. I think it's capacity. And I also think it's different because every community is different. Some communities have Parks Canada. Some communities have Yukon Government Visitor Tourism Services. And some communities are going alone without any assistance. So, and I don't know why. I don't know why there's Yukon Government Tourism Services in some rural communities and not in others.
Yeah.
I know the tourism, some of them have, it's at the gateway. So Watson Lake, Haines Junction, I assume, and Dawson. But John, I cut you off there. Jump in.
No, I just wanted to echo what Corey just said. It's this hodgepodge of an approach to actually solving these things that I struggle with personally and professionally. And the result speaks for itself because it's so difficult to move forward if we don't address the structure.
Yeah, John, that was a great point because I was driving there too. My interest is always community economic development, and it's come up in other conversations. I'm trying to remember where, but a lot of them. You know, when it comes to municipalities, and if you were on part of the earlier call when we were talking to Val, we talked very early, John, early on, and John brought it up, and I support him around. You know, we have a structural problem with our municipalities. We're stretched. We're talking to elected officials. One of the issues is we have one full-time elected officials in the Yukon, municipal official in the Yukon, and that's the mayor of Whitehorse. You know, it's a big municipality, no problems there. Their councillors are part-time. And then when you get in the rules, we're all doing it above and beyond everything. Yeah. Even my role as president is above and beyond my job and kids and all that. So it's a bit of that's a structural issue. So a lot of the work falls to our CEOs, and in the rural communities, my staff here, I think is 10 total that run public works and the front office, 10 to 12, depending on the season. So we're short staffed, and then, having my interest in economic development, you look and we don't really do much with economic development, but we're very concerned about the welfare of our community, the welfare of our economy directly affects our municipalities. And right now we have no means to affect change or to participate, which is back to John's point. It's just the way we're set up right now. So we've got some broader issues. So June?
Yeah, one of the things we've really been trying to stress in all our communications is the need for more of a one government approach. Right now, there seems to be all these silos and, you know, one department does one thing which really affects other things, but they don't talk to each other. And I'm sure you guys see that all the time, but it is one of the items that was included in the strategy was the need for a one government approach. And we keep bringing it up because we feel that it's a real, real priority.
Corey, you're unmuted. Did you want to add something?
Oh, I just think that is a priority across all the things we do and struggle finding, dragging them out of their silos for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And Corey said, talked also about the capacity issues. I mean, it's just across the board, and I don't want to complain too much about it. It's not about funding. It's just about the way we're set up is not helping us. And we are getting to that point where we're taking more of a community approach to everything we do, which involves getting people out of their silos and raising our voice as well as municipalities. And again, it's not about us doing everything. It's about us contributing where we need to contribute, but it's really difficult. Corey?
I was just going to say, I totally agree with that. And I think that, like I've seen in the last couple of years anyway, that the communities have pushed for a need to be heard and a need to be involved and do stuff, which is great, but it also, we've created more work for ourselves because now people at YG want us to require us to be involved, which is great, but it also means that we have to pay attention to their work as well as our own.
Specifically, we've created more work for Corey and John, which always goes over real well. And Shelley, in my case, so Shelley and I get along great, but I sometimes get that strange look from her about more work. So, I mean, everything you're saying, June, is correct. I'm surprised. I'm still a little puzzled by, because I know when we supported your application, that was one of the things. Is this an AYC appointee? Because that's a little different process than. And when we have supported you, we said yes, we want to support June's application, but it was like amorphous kind of communities position rather than an AYC position.
That was my understanding initially, and that's how I applied, was as representing the communities. In my eye, the communities were those outside of Whitehorse, because I feel that they get lost a lot of the time. And so that was how I applied. And then the first time we got together, something was said. And so I went back and to Denny and Val and said, you know, like, am I representing the communities as just communities, or am I official representative of municipalities? And the response was that I am representing the municipalities.
Oh, that's interesting. We might have to get some clarity. It's just a different process. A little different process. And I'm fine. I mean, if you've heard me, you haven't heard me talk a lot, but I'm more of a communities working together with the First Nation. So I'm really not terribly worried about AYC interest or communities interest, but we need those voices. Yeah. We need someone talking about anywhere outside of Whitehorse, because we get overwhelmed. And I don't care whether you're a municipality or First Nation government or people in general. So it's important to have a strong voice at that table, however they represent communities, but it needs some clarification too.
So, you know, at the time I said, should I be stepping down, because I didn't really apply on that understanding, and I'm not a part of AYC. And they said, no, you know, stay on and we need you. So I've, as I say, keep picking at them that, don't forget the communities.
Yeah.
They keep talking industry, because that's what all the rest of them are. And I'm saying, okay, it's industry plus.
So I'm just conscious of the time. I think we're not going to be finalized. No, Corey's got to go. Just a couple of things. One, it's really interesting. I'm wondering what's happening over in Carcross. They're talking about district governance. And one of the things that's driving that conversation is they've got tourists coming in from all over the place. They come in and they leave a whole bunch of garbage and everything, and no one's actually cleaning it up. And I'm not saying that's their sole response, but that's usually the role we play. And the other thing that lends itself to is when you're doing tourism, how much of that tourism is actually sticking to the local economies, to the local pockets. And that's a whole other conversation. But I mean, I always wonder, you know, I mean, Dawson benefits, had some side benefits for sure, but Carcross, I wonder about that. They don't have a municipality, but I always wonder who benefits in the end from the impact on your local environment. And I think you could say that for almost any community. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, appreciate your listening to me, and look forward to continuing to represent you for the next year.
And we'll get YTAB to a future. I don't think it'll happen this AGM. We're just doing a one day business meeting. It's going to be pretty straightforward, and it's already starting to get jammed with things. But we'll either bring it to a future board meeting or our AGM and conference, which we are aspiring to have next May, if all goes well. We'll see. Yeah. But we'd certainly like to make connections, but also full understanding of some of the challenges we're having on our end. So. Yeah.
I would like people to contact me if they have issues that they would like to see me bring forward. As I say, we're not an advocacy organization, but if it's issues that are affecting on a major area, it is something we can at least bring up, and we may be told that no, that's not your role, but at least we can find out where it should go.
All right, well, let's give it some thought, because again, economic development tourism, I don't think we've had an overt conversation at AYC about it, but certainly it does affect all of our communities, and it's both a benefit and also there's an impact there too. So we'll keep it in mind and figure out how to improve that communication.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, everyone. It's 10 after. I appreciate John. I appreciate you hanging in there for an extra 10 minutes. And this has been recorded, so I assume we'll get it out. So thanks a lot to everybody. Thank you, John. Thanks, Laura, for organizing it.
Have a good one.
All right.
Have a good day.